Welcome back, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
We're so excited to be back today.
Oh, we are. It's a very windy day where we are. So if you hear some howling, we do not have animals. We just have wind.
We have lots of wind.
Oh, man.
It's spring.
It is Arkansas.
Yeah.
I was trying for weeks. I kept telling Brock, what's that lion thing about spring? And he'd say, I don't know what it is. And it finally hit me the other day. Isn't it like March comes in like a lion and goes out like a lamb? Or is it spring?
No, it's March. In like a lion, out like a lamb.
Okay. Yeah.
And well, it's so true here.
It is very true. But, okay, Kim. Well, we got deep last week and we're going to go deeper today. I'm super excited about today.
We did. I've been thinking so much about that and about being vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, it really goes against how I think we're brought up to be vulnerable, because that's being open and exposed. And
talking about what you're experiencing and feeling. And I think it even goes against, even now, with like social media trying to present that perfect. Oh,
absolutely.
You know, we have all these influencers and stuff, and it's like, whoa.
I follow Jennifer Todrick, the rambling redhead, and she'll show, she is so cute. And she'll show like, this is for my picture, but this is real life over here.
Yeah, that's good. And
yes, because that's not real life. That's a highlight reel.
It is. I just keep on thinking about, you know, we're talking about creating meaningful relationships, meaningful connections, and how Brené said, you know, in her research, it wasn't fear that got in the way. It was that armor and how we self-protect when we feel uncertain or fearful. I just think that is something we have got to really hone in on in our lives.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Let's think about some ideas of when it does take some courage in the classroom. Like
for students or for us?
Well, I think let's do both.
Okay.
There's a bunch for them.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I told you before this podcast started about a student this afternoon when I was walking him out. I said, how was your day? And he completely went to pieces. And he told me, I've been stressed about this all day. I've had a really, really hard day. And he's a fourth grader.
Yeah.
And he's just been sitting with that all day.
Right.
And he needed to let it out. So
it was a volcano.
It was. It was. It had to come out. And afterwards, he said, thank you for talking to me. Precious, precious. So that he had been holding on to that. And I guess I felt safe enough, safe space for him.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. I hope I can always be that for students. But, you know, it's hard. He's in front of his peers.
Mm-hmm.
They're fourth graders. We talked about last time, you know, they're already they're shifting away from pleasing Miss Kim to, I want to really please my peers.
Right.
And fourth grade is where that starts to transpire a lot. You taught fourth grade. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I taught my kids 2 years in a row in that one job where I had them as third graders and then as fourth graders the next year. And I would really see that change, especially in the spring, really more so with the girls than the boys. But, you know, just some massive changes.
Yeah.
So it takes courage to ask for help. It takes courage to say you don't know. I may have shared this on the podcast, but one year, I think it was my second year at the university level, I was teaching in this large room. It was dark. It was not very pretty. It was arranged poorly. Finally, a few years later, I got my hands on it, changed it. But there were a ton of baseball boys in that college room, and no one would speak out. Hardly anybody would answer a question. And like, that's all I do. I'm asking questions. And I'm getting a brick wall all the time. And I just started implementing lots of ripples, you know, where you first ask the question. The ripple is the teacher poses a question, the students answer it on their own. Then they talk about it in a pair or a small group, and then they talk about it out loud, and they can share. So I could share your answer if I wanted to. Right. And finally, I got some people answering. Mm-hmm. And it's just they did not have the courage to speak up.
No.
Because there's a slew of good looking, great guys in there, you know, and those girls are not going to say a word. No. And so I think that's something we need to consider, that it does take courage for them to do that, those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
And for thinking about the armor they put up, it's like the silent armor, mm-hmm. or the I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'd rather act like I don't know an answer than say a wrong answer.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I, as a mom of boys, you know this too. Boys are way more vulnerable than we think they are. And mm-hmm. they live in a world where they are not supposed to be like that.
Right.
And, you know, as their mother, I've seen a lot of insecurities that are natural. It's mm-hmm. natural to be that way. We need to let them know that that's okay.
It's okay to be upset. It's okay to be disappointed and hurt, mm-hmm. and show it.
Yeah.
We don't, you know, the more that we shut down their emotions, I think the more armor they will build up over time.
I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so too.
That's not going to end well. It's my prediction. It's not going to end well.
You know what we need to do is give them the language. So we talked about the last time. They don't have the language for it, and they're not sure how to express what they really feel. They know mad, sad, happy.
Right.
They don't know anything else.
And you just gave me a perfect segue, I think that's the word, into today. Because today is all about walking alongside someone. And a huge part of walking alongside someone is listening. And talk about some personal reflection as I was reading this section. It was pretty big. And I have realized over the past few years that I'm just not the best listener because my mind, like I'm thinking while people are talking. It looks like I'm engaged, but a lot of times I'm thinking, I'm not truly listening.
Guilty.
And so when I was reading this about the courage to walk alongside someone, because that's the second, let's review, listeners. Sorry. So we're talking about ways to create meaningful connection. And as a review, we're studying Brené Brown's work in Atlas of the Heart. It's at the back of her book, the last section. And her definition of connection is so good. But here it is. And if you listened last time, fill in the parts you know with me. Connection is the energy that exists between people when they feel seen, heard, and valued. When they can give and receive without judgment. And when they derive sustenance and strength from the relationship.
Hmm.
Yeah, I know. It's like every time I read it, I'm like, man.
I know. When they feel seen, heard, and valued.
Without judgment.
Without judgment and get sustenance.
Mm-hmm.
They're better people.
Because of it.
Because of it.
Mm-hmm.
And their life is better because of it.
That's what we want out of our students in our classrooms is not just to be better people because we taught them math,
mm-mm.
but because they were in a relationship with us.
That's right. Yeah.
And that we are a better people because we were in relationship
with
them.
Oh, yes.
And I think you think about the kids you really connected with over the years and you are a better person because.
Oh, 100%.
You know? And, you know, I think we can say that for sure collectively as out of every group, you know, I'm a better teacher, I'm a better person, but you can specifically think of kids and what we want to do is try to broaden that reach and almost be able to say it about everybody.
Yes.
Everybody in my classroom, and then everybody that I'm close to. You know, I hope these relationships that I have that are meaningful can get more meaningful, you know, with my husband, with my kids, et cetera. But then I also hope relationships that I've got that are kind of surface level, you know, that I can take it deeper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so yeah. Brené gives three, like, I picture them as pillars of having connection, of not having connection, of creating meaningful connections, or she says cultivating.
And yes.
Remember, the first one is our episode last time, which if you haven't listened, you can go ahead and listen to today, but I encourage you to go back. It's called grounded confidence. And that's really this mindset of learning and improving, observing, and it's really focused on us. Us and others, but mainly focused on us.
If we can only do, we can only change ourselves. And that's really right. Practicing courage and being curious and and committing to, I thought about it a lot, this rumbling with vulnerability.
Yes, it's
vulnerability.
A big one.
I have to say it fast. And just knowing that it's okay to be vulnerable.
It's okay
to let your armor down, to let your shield down.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is not fine.
Everything is not fine.
Everything's fine.
And we do not have to perform to this inner, and I catch myself in this little cycle of this inner expectations of perfection. The house needs to be perfect. Even my classroom, when I left, I wanted it to be perfect, you know, and if it wasn't, it would be on my head, you know, like hanging there. And, you know, she really says we need to commit to mastery and practice and not get in that perfectionism thing, because that just throws you in the shame cycle. You know, like when it's not perfect, bam.
Yes.
You're going into the depths. And then really, I think one thing about grounding confidence we need to remember is being very connected with ourselves, and thinking about the way we're responding, the way we're feeling, all those things, and being curious about it. So, you know, like, why am I don't know, just like, why am I avoiding conversation with this person?
Mm.
What really gets into it, or et cetera. So the second skill set, what Kim led me into that I got away from, is the courage to walk alongside. And this is about others. And of course, I mean, this would be like, well, duh, yeah, that's about relationships. But the way that she describes it is fantastic.
It is. And when she compares it to the near enemies and far enemies,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh my goodness. Walking alongside does not mean that I control the path.
And I think we do that with our students.
We do.
I know I
and
sure
our own children.
And our own children.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's not, we're not controlling the path and we're not walking away from it.
That's right. We're not going to ignore the path.
Right.
Dismiss your feelings.
Yeah. And that is just big. So she says in the book, you know, she really asked herself, what does it mean to be others focused, to use language in the service of connecting, to be compassionate, empathetic, and non-judgmental? And I really want to ask you, listeners, because I'm asking myself this question actually a bunch lately, is when I am listening or helping or advising, et cetera, you know, am I truly being empathetic and trying, I am trying to control the path. You know, especially like working with teachers, like I want them to do this so bad, you know, and even like you said, with our personal kids, like we want them to make this choice, et cetera. But that's not the courage to walk alongside because we're controlling it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. And we want to do that because we think we know best.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another thing that gets in the way of us at walking alongside is showing pity or comparing suffering. So it's like somebody's sick and you're like, oh, I've done, you know, and I catch myself doing this too. I think we all do, you know, it's like a story. You hear somebody hurting themselves and you're like, oh, I'm hurt too or whatever. Yeah. And that is not walking alongside. Because again, we're trying to direct the attention. We're trying to control it back and it goes back to us.
That's right. We do.
Because
then it's not all about us. What we said the other day, it's not about us.
Yeah.
We haven't walked in those shoes and we don't know.
Mm-mm. I think I said it the other day, you know, she said the only way to know what somebody's feeling is to ask. You know, with little kids, we might have to help them and prompt them, you know, because they don't have the words. But it is super important. I was just thinking this morning as I was getting ready, anger is a great example. We see someone being angry. We are immediately controlling the path because we think we know what's going on, that they're angry. When, you know, anger is a secondary emotion, there's something to go along with it. That's causing that anger. So frustration, disappointment. When I get angry, it's over expectations. You know, I've set myself the stealth expectations. It's such a bummer that I do that. And nobody else knows that. And so, you know, if you're trying to walk alongside me, you might be guiding me in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so important that we truly walk alongside the person so we can help.
That's right. Bob Goff had a story about when he was a young man and I can't remember exactly. This just occurred to me. He was going to leave. He was going to run away or leave or something. And a teacher or a mentor of some type showed up and he goes, "Well, I'm with you, Bob." I think he was just going to drop out of school, maybe college. And so they take off and he'd say, "Well, I just want to go out here and I'm just going to live out here and hike," or whatever his choice was. And this friend, this mentor would say, "Okay, I'm with you." He never said, "Nah, that's a dumb thing to do," or "This is going to fail. You're going to fall flat on your face." He just said, "I'm with you. I'm with you." And that really stuck out to him. And it was in his book, Love Does. But that was what he was doing. He was walking alongside. He just said, "I'm with you. I'm with you."
That's beautiful.
I know. It really is. That's a great book.
I don't know if I've ever read it or not.
Oh, it's a great one. It does. I think that's true, Laura. I think we all filter what we see and we observe through what our experiences are. And
yes.
I'll say to my husband, I'll just use him for example. I'll say, "Well, why don't we ask so-and-so to go out to dinner?" "Oh, they would want to go out to dinner with us. I wouldn't want to do that." And I'll say to him, and I don't know if I learned this from Brene Brown or where I learned it, "Are you a fortune teller or a mind reader?"
Oh, yeah.
Right. That's now, which one are you going to be? Because we don't know what somebody else is thinking or doing. We can look at them and we think they're angry, mm-hmm. but we are neither fortune tellers nor mind readers.
So I try to do both so much.
Oh, I do. Yeah.
Listeners, I'm going to read you a little section about controlling the path because I thought it was good and it really brought it to life. And I think we can transfer this to school. She says, Brene says, the near enemy of walking alongside is controlling the path. Sometimes it can look and feel like someone is with us, but really they're trying to control either us or the outcome.
Mm.
I think most of us do this more than we'd like to admit. For example, my child comes home and is upset because they got in trouble at school. They were talking while the teacher was talking and they were told that the behavior was disrespectful. I'm trying to be with them in the experience, but I quickly find myself worried about the teacher, about what the teacher will think of my child, and worse, what they will think of me as a parent. So now, rather than being with my child, I'm trying to control how that is going. Forget about asking what happened or checking in to see what they're feeling. I want to be with you in this turns into, you need to email your teacher and apologize right this minute. What were you thinking?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, yeah, guilty, guilty, guilty.
Mm-hmm. She also quoted Anne Lamott actually in that book, and she said, help is the sunny side of control. How about that? All of us who were raised taking care of people and trying to manage environments can default into wanting to control the path, mm-hmm. regardless of our great intentions, especially when it's in someone's best interest. Mm-hmm. And I think as mothers, especially I'm the mother of adult children.
Yeah.
I want to help them when I need to let them figure it out.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's like, it's so hard because we're trying to, my kids are younger and it's, I'm trying to prevent so many things from happening,
mm-hmm.
but they do have a good head on their shoulder and there is a time to advise, but I do need to make sure that I am walking alongside them at points and just listening.
Yeah. Because you know what I found, I'll tell you this. This is a hint to all moms of boys. Get in a car and drive. As long as they're facing forward in a car, they will talk.
Yeah, for sure.
They will.
Mm-hmm.
But we do need to just let them talk. And it's okay to give options. Here's an example. My son is getting married next summer. And he and I were talking and I said, Landon, I'm going to give you some options. These are things I can help you with, but you don't have to do any of them. It does not matter to me what you do. These are your choices.
Mm-hmm.
I'll help you do whatever you want to do. Here are some options. If you want to do that, that's fine. If you come up with something else, that's great too. I don't think that's trying to control. I don't think I'm trying to be controlling because I really don't care what he does.
Right.
He can go off and get married. He can have a huge wedding. He can have it at my house in my backyard. I don't care. It is not, it's his wedding. It's not mine.
Right.
And he said, will you talk to Heather about it? And I said, no, I will not.
It's your job.
He's your fiance. Y'all decide. And whatever you do, I support. But yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. She really brings in the, and this is powerful for us to think about as teachers, is the word power. So, you know, who has the power in their relationship? And us as teachers, that would be us, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And it is dangerous because we do have power over these kids. A lot of times when I was teaching those college kids, I would get a little overwhelmed as I was teaching them because I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I have too much power over them. You know, I had them for like 6 classes over the years or whatever. Yeah. And I would think, oh my goodness. But we have to be careful with that. So she gives examples for walking alongside people. She says power with is based on mutual support, solidarity, collaboration, and recognition and respect for differences.
Yes.
Power two is based on the belief that each individual has the power to make a difference. And power within is defined by an ability to recognize differences and respect others, grounded in a strong foundation of self-worth and self-knowledge. And so when I was thinking about that, I was like, oh my goodness, wouldn't that be beautiful if like we really thought about those three ways to do power with our classrooms? Like talk about a culture shift.
Yeah.
Yeah. Power with, power to, and power within. That would be beautiful. And instead of just this power over us, you know.
Right. Yeah. Mm. We can use that. I see it. I've done it. This power we have over children, and they're helpless. They're helpless.
Yeah. Oh, and they're just sponges.
I mean,
even 20-year-olds are sponges.
We are showing them how to treat people and how to live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's scary to give up that control in your classroom. It really is. Like most of my day teaching, I'm not the one talking, like they are. And that was a shift for me over the years where I let more and more control go over. But man, what a difference it made in my classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it, you know, I didn't realize it then and I didn't have the language, but I was shifting the power over to them.
Think of it as empowering them. That's really what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You're empowering them.
Right. And keeping them awake and engaged.
And awake and engaged. Yes.
Oh, man.
Awake and engaged.
Uh-huh.
So the skill sets, are we going to talk about those?
Yeah, let's talk about those.
Okay.
So one thing that stuck out to me about the skills that are involved in walking alongside is, you know, really not walking away. And that is literally and figuratively building up walls with people. And she gives examples, you know, ignoring behaviors or ignoring people, I guess, dismissing comments like, oh, that's really not that bad.
No.
Or no, it's not a big deal or whatever. The power thing. And just making sure that we are engaging with the people that we are in. I think it's so easy for us to dismiss kiddos sometimes. You know, they come off the playground, they're so upset, and we're like, that's not a big deal, you know, in our heads. But it is a big deal to them.
It is huge. Yeah.
And when we dismiss it, and we're not trying to be mean. We're trying to be like, get it together, kid. You know, like it's not the end of the world. But it would be dismissive of their feelings.
I think that comes into practicing empathy.
Oh,
where
yeah.
You say, you know what? I know you're really upset about that right now. And that you should be, I mean, you have a right to be upset. I've heard, I don't know where I read this or heard it on the podcast. I listen to so much stuff, but especially with young children, when they're upset about something, let's say they want the red crayon, not the blue one. I want the red one. And you say, you know what? I know you really want that red crayon.
Mm-hmm.
And in a little bit, we'll get the red crayon. But right now, we're going to use the blue one.
And so that's validating.
Yes. Somebody else has it. And I know you want it. I know you do. And I'm going to make sure you get it before this is over.
Mm-hmm.
But right now we have to use the red one. And in a minute, we'll have the blue one or whatever it is. Yeah.
Oh, Kim, you are so good at that stuff. I'm like, oh, gosh, use the red crayon.
No, I'm not really.
She says, you know, comparing.
Hmm.
When we start comparing.
Yes.
That we are no longer walking alongside.
We are not practicing compassion and empathy then.
Mm-hmm.
We are turning it back on to ourself.
Yeah.
Really. We're becoming more self-oriented and not others focused.
Mm-hmm. The blame game. I was trying to think of a specific example of that. And I don't even think that it would have to be like blaming, like it's not my fault or whatever. It could be Like the other day, we were trying to be early to school, which we've been getting up earlier, and that's been a big help in our household. But the one person who wanted to be the earliest put my car key not in the right place.
Uh-oh.
And so we had a massive search because we only have one car key that's at our house. My father-in-law made a copy of it. That's a long story. But, you know, he was sad because he had wanted to be at school earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And it would not have helped for me to say, well, we could have been early if you would have not moved my key. You know, mm-hmm. He already knew it.
He already felt bad.
He already felt bad. And the natural consequences kind of took care of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I was like, oh, I'm sorry, babe, but you're not going to get to go first today. You know, and it was just like, that's just is what it is.
Yeah.
And I think that kept that situation more peaceful instead of turning into be a bigger deal than me saying, you know, we could have been early. But so even I think blaming like that, reminding them.
Yeah, we need to de-escalate.
Yeah.
She talks about that, Laura, about being relational. I think that's part, all of that ties into being relational instead of being transactional.
Oh,
yes, you do that.
Mm-hmm. Or trying to connect just for your personal gain, mm-hmm. To fit in.
Yes. And I loved, I made notes about fitting in and what it is and what it isn't. Where did I write that? Belonging versus fitting in. I wrote, belonging is being somewhere you want to be and they want you. Fitting in is being somewhere you want to be and they don't care one way or another.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. We all want to belong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to fit in a lot of places.
We're too geeky to fit in.
I do. But belonging is being where you want to be and where they want you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think yeah. For a lot of times we do that to fit in or to control.
I think we can really take that concept to our classrooms and think about how to create belonging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you belong in this classroom, whether it's for one period or the whole day, that you have a place here. And maybe that would help mm-hmm. that need to try to fit in or whatever, you know, fit in the mold. You know, I'll hear my right. young kids say something about the popular kids. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Gosh, are we doing that already? You know?
I know.
And it makes me so sad.
It does.
And I want to be like, oh, man, all the people that work at Apple, and they weren't popular.
No.
It's not important.
No.
But it is that they're trying to fit in. So, mm-hmm. And even if they were in that group or whatever, it wouldn't be true connection.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And the far enemy of that is disengaging and disconnecting. So we see kids trying to fit in mm-hmm. when they want to belong. And then we see them disengage and disconnect when they really want to belong.
Right.
And maybe we haven't helped them feel like they belonged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a sad thing to think about.
That is a sad thing. It's really hard, I think, with girls, you know, especially at that middle school level. Because they do want to fit in so much.
Yes.
But man, if we could just have them read this book with us, they'd realize that they wouldn't be connected.
I know.
It is. I think I brought up showing pity already. Did I say that or did I just think it?
No.
I didn't.
Oh, you did talk about, yes, you did. Comparing your suffering.
Mm-hmm. That we're definitely not walking alongside when we're showing pity.
And then the far enemy of that, Laura, is treating people like they're invisible, just ignoring them.
Yeah. I mean, that is disconnection right there at its finest. You know, like, I do not.
Yes.
There's a wall. And then this is interesting to me. Let's talk about this one because I need examples to figure it out. She talks about, you know, a skill set to walk alongside would be knowing and applying the language of human experience and emotion. So that's what we need
You're
to be
freezing
doing.
Up a little bit.
But
on my
an
end.
Enemy, something that's going to break connection is acting out, shutting down, or giving up.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Like when we're, and this is in relationship with others. So acting out, I don't know. What do you think about, how do you envision that?
Well, in my mind, when I was reading that, I was thinking about little kids. Obviously, I think about little kids. I'm kind of an early childhood primary school person, but I thought about my grandchildren also, that when they don't have the language of the human experience, what else are they going to do? We get really upset with them when they start having a temper tantrum, and it's because they don't have the language. I also have a student who's in the fourth grade who just gets, and he's frustrated and he's angry and he feels like he's not belonging or he's not fitting in, and he doesn't have the language to express what's really wrong with him.
Yes. Oh, gosh. Okay. You helped me think of an example.
Okay.
So, you know, my girlfriends were always talking. We use Marco Polo all the time. And one of the girls was saying that a friend, I mean, this is like third and fourth grade, they were at a sleepover or something, and one of the girls bit another girl. So it's like they were trying to be together, but she probably didn't have that emotion. To express. And so, boom, she acted out in a way like that.
Yeah. So if you don't know how to express yourself and have the language to express that emotion that you're feeling, what are you going to do? Well, you're probably going to act out. You're going to shut down. You're going to give up.
I'm just thinking about this like, in the example of, let's say I'm helping take care of elderly parents or something like that, you know, I'm trying to walk alongside them, but there's probably a lot going on and I might be acting out, you know, or shutting down. You know, she talks about when we're walking alongside someone, if we self-protect and self-focus and armor up, you know, no longer are we walking beside each other.
No, we're not. If we're not being curious, if we're not being vulnerable, if we're not practicing humility and openness, and no, we're not walking alongside. We're trying to control and shape.
Oh, man. Okay, so thinking about this, guys, this is a lot we talked about, but kind of like, what do you hope listeners take away from this episode, Kim, to their classrooms or to their homes?
Well, I wish that everyone would practice empathy. I just wish if I had a magic wand, I would help everyone have that gift of empathy or that desire to be empathetic and non-judgmental, like walking alongside and being with someone and just listening. Just listen.
Yeah. This is this one in our next episode, which is about honoring story, like really listening is they go very well together. But I'm just thinking from this episode, I'm really going to work on this week and hope that everybody will too, is as we are walking alongside, like the little boy you saw today, any of our students, or our own personal children, or our spouse, or whoever, our parents, trying to just listen without judgment and see if we're trying to control the path as we listen. Mm-hmm. And then don't should yourself. I should be, you know, it's being curious. Why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. What am I thinking? You know?
Yeah.
And why am I feeling this way? Or if your reaction is to show pity or compare, et cetera. Yeah, I wish we had enough time to talk about the next one because they go so well together. But next time. We'll see you next time, people. That's right.
I want to hear your feedback on this episode and the last one.
Yeah.
I want to know what you're thinking. And we highly recommend Atlas of the Heart.
Can't recommend
by Brené Brown, actually. Yeah. I mean, she's just...
I think my favorite, too, for teachers would be Atlas of the Heart and Dare to Lead, because mm-hmm. we are definitely leaders.
Yeah,
I think so. But anyway. Okay, well, next time, listeners, we're going to go deep into honoring story. And I know most of your students have stories to tell you. So we're going to talk about it. You know, they always have something to say to us. And so we'll go deep into that and maybe give you some insight about how we can be good, better listeners. So, okay. As always, please rate and review us on your podcast app. Please share this podcast with others. We want to help as many people as possible.
So. We do. We do. So find us on social media.
Yeah.
And like and follow us and share our podcast with as many people as you can.
We super appreciate it.
Yeah.
Have a great week, everybody.